From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. For those people who are interested in saints, and we all are as Catholics, aren't we? These models of holiness and inspiration and great intercessors for us. For the first time in 2 years, Pope Francis canonized a group of saints. And of course, St. Charles de Foucauld, if you've followed any of the Catholic news, he was the big headliner of the event of those 10 future saints, and or 10 current saints as they are now. And we're going to be talking today with Hannah Brockhaus, who's from the Catholic News Agency Rome correspondence. And she's going to talk to us today about the incredible miracle of the non-believing atheist who fell from the top of a building and was impaled, and he lived to be healed and tell that story. So we'll be talking with Hannah about the incredible miracle of St. Charles de Foucauld later in the program. And also we'll be talking about a future saint in the making, and that's an American, Father Edward J. Flanagan. You might know him for his connection and founding of Boys Town. And so we'll be excited to talk about him as one of these potential future saints in our church. And for those people listening to the early broadcast of The Miracle Hunter, you can tune in tonight at May 21st at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for my episode of Explore, where we look at the Holy House of Loreto. It's where the Virgin Mary is believed to have lived and received the Annunciation. But how did this house get from Nazareth to its current home in Italy? I'm going to be checking it out on Explore with the Miracle Hunter. That's tonight, May 21st at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And next week, people can tune in on May 28th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and it's a weekly show. We're going to be going to New Orleans and looking at Our Lady of Prompt Succor, which has inspired Catholics during the darkest periods in New Orleans history, including a disastrous fire and a British attack during the War of 1812. So we'll be visiting New Orleans on the show Explore with the Miracle Hunter. Check that one out next Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And for those people looking for a new book to read about miracles, I've got a new one for you. It's a new book called Science and the Miraculous, How the Church Investigates the Supernatural. It's out from Tan Books and available at EWTNRC.com. Later in the show, we're going to be looking at the 365 Days with Mary project. For today, we've got Our Lady of the Angels from Arcola in Italy in the year 1556. And the might-be saint of the day is Blessed Pietro Parenzo. His feast day is today, May 21st. And the question of the week, it's a tough one. Has the Catholic Church ever used brain scanners during a Marian apparition to figure out if it's true or false? I'll try to answer that one later in the program. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week where we talk about the miracles happening all around the world and those things that relate to miracles. People can sign up at miraclehunter.com for my newsletter, or they can go to my Facebook page, The Miracle Hunter, to find out about the latest and greatest about miracles happening in today's world and those things that relate to miracles. And so, of course, this past Sunday, Pope Francis recognized 10 new saints in the Catholic Church during a canonization mass in St. Peter's Square. It was the first canonization since that of John Henry Newman and four others in October 2019. And there are religious men and women, priests and lay people amongst the 10 people who were recognized as being in heaven with God after living exemplary lives of holiness on earth. And there was actually a litany of saints that was sung before Pope Francis recited the formula of canonization. The new saints are St. Charles de Foucauld, a French soldier and explorer, Titus Brandsma, a Dutch priest, professor, and journalist who opposed the Nazi propaganda, Devashayam Pillai, he's a layman from India, Marie Rivier, the founder of the Congregation of the Sisters of the Presentation, Maria Francesca de Jesus, a 19th century missionary founder who crossed the Atlantic Ocean 7 times, Maria Domenica Mantovani, the first general superior of the Institute of the Little Sisters of the Holy Family, Maria of Jesus Santo Canale, the founder of the Capuchin Sisters of the Immaculate Mary of Lourdes in Sicily, and finally, César de Bus, a French Catholic priest who founded two religious congregations in the 16th century. So that's a lot of them. They canonized all of them in one shot, and things are beginning back to normal in Rome, where they're canonizing saints the way they've always done. let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer that gets the right answer. And this question was surprisingly hard last week. We had lots of people writing in with 2 out of 3 pieces of the puzzle, but it was a tough one to get all three. So we talked last week about the feast day of Our Lady of Fatima, and we talked with Sister Angela de Fatima Coelho about those incredible apparitions and the canonization of the 2 young shepherd children and their cousin, Sister Lucia of Fatima. And so the question related to Fatima was, what 3 other Marian apparitions are also found on the general Roman calendar? So we had Fatima, and then we have Lourdes, Guadalupe, and Our Lady of Mount Carmel. Those are the 3 big ones. And of course, there is an Our Lady of Sorrows. There are various apparitions under that title, but I was looking for those 3, and that was a tough one, apparently. So this week, we've got a new question for you. We're talking later in the show with Steve Wolf from the Father Edward Flanagan Canonization Cause. And the question is, what actor won the Best Actor Academy Award for his portrayal of Father Flanagan in the 1938 film Boys Town? Again, that question, what actor won the Best Actor Academy Award for his portrayal of Father Flanagan in the 1988 film Boys Town? If you think you know that answer, win the prize of the Faces of Mary, send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com or just go to my website, miraclehunter.com, and we'll connect with you that way. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll be talking to Steve Wolf, the president of the Father Flanagan League Society of Devotion, about a potential future saint, and that is Father Edward Flanagan. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who listen to this show and tune in on Fridays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time know about my program, They Might Be Saints. It's a program, a television program on EWTN about the canonization of Americans on the path to sainthood and the search for those intercessory miracles. And in the United States, there are approximately 100 cases of Americans on the path to sainthood, and that being servant of God, venerable, blessed, before they get that second miracle to become a saint. And in my book called They Might Be Saints, I go through the lives of 24 of the venerables and blesseds that lead up to that final sainthood declaration. And before that, we have numerous cases throughout the United States of servants of God. These are out of the gate. This is the start of the canonization cause, where people begin looking into the life on the diocesan level, of looking into the life of heroic virtue to later be submitted and validated potentially by Rome. One of those cases is Father Edward J. Flanagan. He's a servant of God, and he is on that path to sainthood, and we hope and pray that he advances to that next step. And joining us again today is Steve Wolf. He's the president of the Father Flanagan League Society of Devotion and the vice postulator for the cause of this servant of God, Edward J. Flanagan. Welcome back to the show, Steve Wolf.
Michael, thank you. We really appreciate the opportunity to share more information about Servant of God Flanagan and I'll discuss anything you'd like to cover with this case.
Wonderful. As I mentioned, there are numerous examples of servants of God throughout the United States, and even the venerables and blesseds, these people who have formally advanced along the path. Most American Catholics don't know these names. They might know 5 of the 24 or so, but Father Flanagan is a name that they need to get to know. Who was the man, Father Flanagan?
Well, Father Flanagan, I think, is probably most famous and noteworthy for being the founder of Boys Town, which is a youth care program that, you know, it's basically been around now 100 years, over 100 years since Father Flanagan founded it, located out in Nebraska, and it is its own incorporated village. And that program, you know, ended up catching not only national but worldwide attention, particularly when Hollywood learned of Father Flanagan's story and his mission work at Boys Town. and made the film Boys Town, and Spencer Tracy, who played Father Flanagan, went on to win the Oscar for Best Actor playing Father. So that is something that I think is probably pretty noteworthy and puts him on the radar, hopefully with a lot of people. But I think the thing that's really interesting about him is his work actually rose to a global scale, reaching out to the war-torn countries of the World War II war-torn countries throughout the Pacific Rim, as well as Germany and Austria, at the request of President Truman and General MacArthur to visit Japan and Korea and Philippines, as well as, again, Germany and Austria. So he was much bigger. His mission work was much bigger than what was rooted at Boys Town. And he really did have a worldwide effect on the care and treatment of disadvantaged youth.
Amazing. We're talking today with Steve Wolfe, the president of the Father Flanagan League Society of Devotion. We're talking about Father Edward J. Flanagan, the founder of Boys Town. Talk a little bit about Boys Town. How did it come to be? How did the inspiration unfold for making that a reality?
So when Father Flanagan, very early in his priesthood, he did have a parish assignment, but he got permission from the bishop, in addition to his normal pastoral duties at the parish. He noticed that there were a lot of homeless men, a lot of men on the streets, a lot of unemployed people out there. And he got permission to set up a thing called a working man's hotel, which was really a way to give some shelter to drifters, if you will. And it was through that experience of trying to help these men and listening to their stories and trying to understand why they were homeless and why they were having different, you know, mental issues and things like that and trouble with the law. It was through listening to their stories and trying to minister to them that he came to the conclusion that he was getting into their lives at too late of a stage to maybe change their life dramatically. And he realized he needed to work with what he called the embryo men, which were the youth. And it was from that experience that he decided that he was going to pivot his outreach to the homeless boys and disadvantaged youth. And I guess from that point, when he made that pivot, the rest is history with him ultimately establishing Boys Town in 1917. Sorry, I got the wrong century there.
That's all right. But it's persisted for that century and beyond. We're talking today with Steve Wolfe about Father Flanagan League Society of Devotion, talking about Father Edward J. Flanagan. Now, when we talk about the canonization process and this being submitted to Rome, of course, a positio, the position paper, needs to be established by the postulator and submitted to the Congregation for the Cause of Saints. In that position paper, the virtues of Father Flanagan need to be spelled out with testimonies and examples and the whole documentation. Sometimes these are hundreds of pages long. What's going into the assembly process for Father Flanagan? What virtues are being highlighted?
Right. So some of the significant virtues that they're highlighting in there is the fact that in his time, he not only reached out to these disadvantaged youth, but he did something that was quite extraordinary in its time and place, and that is the fact that he reached out to every child that needed his help. He did not focus exclusively on Catholic children. He did not exclusively focus on whites. He was, in fact, radically different from other youth care programs in their day because he reached out to African-American children, Hispanic children, Asian children, every Jewish children, Protestant children. And in fact, you know, even some Catholics back then really frowned on what he was doing because he did this in a way where there was absolutely zero segregation in the way he ministered to these kids and had them all living together under one roof with complete equal stature and status. So that's one of the things, the fact that he helped every single kid that he came across that could need his help. But the fact that he did it with zero segregation. Some other things that we point out, or the Pozzizio points out, is the fact that he was even exposed to great danger. So when, for example, when he was in Germany and Austria after World War II, some of the areas that the Allies were trying to get him to go in and help with these war orphans, he had to pass through Soviet-controlled territory. And we've come to learn that the Soviets, the Soviet Army, actually had orders to arrest him if they found him, because part of his ministering to these kids was also to help them learn democratic values. You know, what it would be to be a free person and not be kind of living under the yoke of a totalitarian type of a political system. So his youth care was not only bringing the gospel to these children, but to bring certain Western values about, you know, governance and that sort of thing. So he was actually perceived as a threat by the Soviets. And so they were, you know, for the time that he was over there, they were like, you know, they found him, they're going to try to shut him down and keep him out of play with helping these war-torn these countries and these children. So that's a couple of examples. He helped to liberate Japanese Americans that were interned in these internment camps at the outbreak of World War II in the United States. So that what you see here is not only a youth care pioneer, but you will see a social justice or a civil rights pioneer that was decades ahead of the civil rights movement in this country. So there are some, you know, things where he was exposed to mass public ridicule, a lot of pressure to shut his mission work down. The Ku Klux Klan, they were active in Nebraska in his day, and the fact is they had threatened his life, as well as they threatened to burn Boys Town to the ground if he didn't get rid of the blacks and the Jewish kids that were under his care. And so when you talk about heroic virtue and this extraordinary charity, I mean, he literally had his life threatened for trying to help God's children and all of God's children with zero discrimination. So I think those are some of the real strong points that are emphasized in the Pozzizio.
Amazing. We're talking today with Steve Wolf, the president of the Father Flanagan League Society of Devotion. We're talking about Servant of God, Father Edward J. Flanagan. And in other sainthood causes throughout the United States, like Venerable Nelson Baker with Our Lady of Charity, or Our Lady of Victories, excuse me, even right after the death of Father Nelson Baker, it was suggested that he was perhaps a saint, with thousands of people gathering at his funeral. What was it like in the aftermath of the death of Father Flanagan? Did people recognize his life of sanctity, or did it take some time for the cause to get rolling?
Well, two parts to that, right? So it took some time for the cause itself to get rolling, certainly. And that's something that we had to, in fact, when we opened the cause and petitioned the church to do so, we had to make a case or an explanation as to why this cause basically opened up some 40 years after his passing. So, but back in his time, oh yeah, he was nationally mourned in his passing. And the processions and the funeral services at Boys Town were massive. And in fact, President Truman even came to Boys Town to mourn his passing. And so it was quite a thing when he did pass away. And we do know that there was essentially a groundswell of devotion toward him, absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the things we explained to the Vatican that was just simply true about what happened in that time, he was so central to the work that was going on at Boys Town that the focus that everybody had wasn't to so much hold him up and say, you know, to the Catholic faithful and to petition the church, say, we believe this man to be a saint. It was, what can we do to make sure his mission doesn't fall apart now that he's passed? So all the spiritual energy and all the philanthropy and everything was really coalesced around keeping Boys Town going. And as we mentioned earlier, you know, that youth care program, which is a world recognized youth care institution, you know, has been going on now for a century. So I think at that time, the emphasis the sentiment around the passion toward his work was focused on making sure his mission survived. And so that's I think, one of the big things. I think some other things that are pretty interesting about Father Flanagan, and this is probably somewhat a result of the fact that the film Boys Town was made. Father Flanagan is the only Catholic priest to ever appear like with a solo image on a U.S. postage stamp. I think that speaks to the fact that he inspired a whole nation and not just the Catholic faithful, that he was an icon of faith and religion and work in the United States. The other thing that's I believe that stamp came out in the 80s, 1980s. Something else that's happened even more recently was, say, within the last 5 years or so, Father Flanagan is the only Catholic priest to appear on U.S. currency. And the U.S. Mint did come up with a series of coins, quarters and nickels and whatnot, and came up with a series of coins commemorating the 100th anniversary of Boys Town, but they save Father Flanagan for the gold coin. It's supposed to be, I guess, technically like a dollar coin that's worth hundreds of dollars. But so Father Flanagan, even after his passing all these years later, is someone that is still really venerated by a whole nation for the work that he's done in his lifetime and the legacy that he's left America and the world.
That's amazing. Those are two good trivia answers, perhaps for a future trivia question. We've been talking today with Steve Wolf, the president of the Father Flanagan League Society of Devotion. And turning to the canonization cause itself, again, we have the four stages of canonization: servant of God, venerable, where their life of heroic virtue is established. When one miracle is validated by Rome, they're blessed. A second miracle, they are a saint. How is the cause going? What is the current status of the cause of Father Edward J. Flanagan?
Well, we're moving as fast as God's will allow with the Vatican and pushing through the pandemic and the effect that that's had on all human forms of activity. But we're very excited with the fact that we will likely be scheduled for the second step of the Roman phase, which at the Congregation of Saints represents being reviewed by the Theological Commission. So the Historical Commission finished up their work a couple years ago, and we've been waiting, trying to get on the docket for the Theological Commission. So we do anticipate that we will be scheduled for their review later this year. So that's great news to us. And then there's a third step where the work of the Theological and the Historical Commission are kind of reviewed and validated by a convening of a group of bishops and cardinals before they then pass on any final recommendation to the Pope. So that's where we are with that. In relationship to potential miracles, we've had, since the cause started, we've had over 25 alleged miracles reported to us, and we've had two tribunals opened up to review a couple of those a few years ago that ultimately the panel decided that there was some level of human explanation for the outcomes in those particular cases. But where we are now that we're really excited about is we do have one case involving one person that has two potential miracles that happen over, say, a year and a half apart. And we're really excited not only with this report, but sometimes, and we're probably not the only cause that has this issue, where you have alleged miracles reported where the people that are central to what happened there won't necessarily agree to cooperate with the investigations and the things that go on to ultimately, hopefully, prove out and have the Pope declare a miracle. So we're actually thrilled that in this particular case, this woman, her family and others that were praying around her, that we have their full cooperation. We have their testimonies. We have, the medical release form, so we're collecting that now so that those can get reviewed by some independent physicians. And so we're very prayerful and hopeful that that these will pan out and we'll soon be convening a tribunal for these two reports, and that hopefully that then gets forwarded on to the Vatican for further scrutiny.
Wonderful. Well, that sounds very hopeful. We've been talking today about Father Edward J. Flanagan, currently a servant of God. We pray that he moves along that path to sainthood. And for people who want to find out more and perhaps seek the intercession of Father Flanagan, what's the best website or other place that they can go?
Terrific. Yeah, thank you for that. We would encourage people to go to fatherflanagan.org, fatherflanagan.org, and that's our main website, and there's information there on how to start a prayer group. We have downloads for people. We do have kind of a standard intercessory prayer that we encourage people to use with their prayers. In addition to that, we do have a Facebook page, and just go on Facebook and look up Father Flanagan, Father Flanagan League Society of Devotion, and that's where we tend to put more current information and updates. So those are the two key places to go to get more information about this great, heroically virtuous man and this cause.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Steve Wolfe, the president of the Father Flanagan League Society of Devotion, for joining us today and talking to us about the future American saint, Father Edward J. Flanagan. Thanks so much, Steve, for joining us on today's program.
We thank you for this opportunity. God bless you.
God bless. That was Steve Wolfe talking to us about Father Flanagan. Check him out at fatherflanagan.org. And of course, check out They Might Be Saints, my television program on EWTN at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, where we cover people whose lives like Father Flanagan on that path to sainthood. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. I love getting questions from people. I think people are genuinely curious about miracles. And I love when I give presentations. I travel around the country. I give about 20 presentations a year. And during those presentations, I usually present 45 minutes on Marian apparitions or Eucharistic miracles or the canonization of saints or other things. And then afterwards, I always leave it open to question and answer. And I like to see what people are interested in. People have questions about miracles, and hopefully I have some answers. And for people who are interested in inviting me to their parish to speak, go to miraclehunter.com, click on the Contact or Speaking tab, and you can invite me that way. And my calendar is filling up for 2022 and is starting to fill up a little bit for 2023, so please send me an email for that. And so the question for this week is a good one. And in my book, Science and the Miraculous, How the Catholic Church Investigates the Supernatural, I actually get into this a little bit. And so the question is, has the Catholic Church ever used brain scanners during a Marian apparition? And that's from Jim. Thanks, Jim. So what's interesting about the use of brain scanners is that they're looking to see if there's some neural activity that's outside of the normal. So people have sort of baseline brain activity, and then theoretically, if they were in some sort of a trance or a state of ecstasy or otherwise, the brain scan should be very different. And so one of the complications is this, is we might say, let's hook up every Marian visionary to a brain scanner. But as it turns out, most Marian visionaries do not have predictable apparitions, meaning they don't know the date or the time that it's going to happen. So short of having somebody hooked up to a brain scanner all the time, it's almost impossible to catch it. But there are have been a few apparitions that have happened like clockwork, like at the alleged apparitions in 1981 and beyond at Medjugorje, or the 1960s apparitions of Garabandal, or Nancy Fowler in Conyers, Georgia. Those are three cases where the Catholic Church has actually allowed independent studies of scientists on these cases. So what's important to note is that those studies that were done in those three cases were never authorized by the church. They were independent scientists, so the church did not have control over the setup, and they didn't have control over of analyzing the results, but the results are out there. And so in Medjugorje, apparently the reports from that brain scan activity is that there was something interesting happening there. Again, this is not something officially sanctioned by the church, but those who ran the test claim that there was brain activity that was different during the apparitions. Edgar Vandal, those alleged apparitions that happened in Spain at San Sebastián de Garabandal in the 1960s, they also found some interesting neural activity. In Nancy Fowler in Conyers, Georgia, in the United States, of course, that was another case where there was some interesting abnormal brain activity as well. Does that prove these apparition claims are true or are false? We don't know. The results of those tests have never been verified by the Catholic Church, and there's never been a case where a brain scan has actually led to the approval of a Marian apparition. But I get into this thing in great detail in the new book, Science and the Miraculous, from Tan Books. You can pick that one up from EWTNRC.com. And thanks, Jim, for your great question. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week where we look at the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to that day in the calendar year. You all know Fatima, May 13th, or Lourdes, February 11th, or Guadalupe, December 12th. Those are the three big ones, especially in the miracle world. And so for today's date, we've got Our Lady of the Angels from Arcola in Italy in the year 1556. And the story goes like this. Baldassare Flambierti and family attended the Mass for Pentecost in the parish church of Arcola on May 21st, 1556. The five daughters, with permission of the family, decided to visit the nearby forest, where they at times would like to go and play and then pray. And they walked for a bit, and then they were ringing the church bells. They heard ringing of church bells filling the air, and they stopped to pray the rosary. Suddenly, a bright light and the choirs of angels surrounded the girls, and the Virgin in bright white as the sun appeared, saying, "Fear not, I am Mary, the mother of Jesus, queen of angels. Go tell the people to pray and do penance." And the Bishop of Sarsana led an investigation that declared the event miraculous, and the shrine of Our Lady of Angels of Arcola was completed in the year 1558. And that's today's devotion of the day, Our Lady of the Angels from Arcola in Italy in the year 1556. For more information on this fascinating devotion or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can go to the website 365dayswithmary.com. You can pick up the book or you can download the free app from the Apple App Store. And that's 365 Days with Mary. Let's take a look at the sainthood news. We do this every week where we try to keep you updated on those people moving along the pipeline, moving from servant of God, venerable, blessed, and then saint. And there was big news, of course, and we talked about it a little bit in the program already today, the canonization of 10 new saints of the Catholic Church during a canonization mass in St. Peter's Square last Sunday. And it was the first canonization since that of John Henry Newman and four others in October of 2019. So this was a pandemic, a COVID break that they had, and now they're back on track canonizing saints. So that's exciting news for Catholics. And religious men and women, priests and a layman, were among the 10 people who were recognized to be in heaven after living exemplary lives of holiness on earth. And for those people who weren't martyrs, especially, we have the need for two miracles, one for beatification and one for canonization, to move them along that path to sainthood. So exciting news in the world of saint making. Let's take a look at They Might Be Saints, Saint of the Day. And so for every day throughout the calendar year, there's a different servant of God or venerable or blessed who is on that path to sainthood, who needs a miracle to advance to become a saint. And so for today's date, we have Blessed Pietro Parenzo. May 21st is his feast day, and he was born in the 12th century in Rome. And he was born to the Italian nobility, and he was the son of Giovanni, a senator and judge, and his mother's name was Odolina. And we know he had brothers, and he was married at one point, but nothing else survives from his early life. So he served in the court of Pope Innocent III, and he was the chosen rector and papal governor of Orvieto in Italy. And he worked to combat heretics in the middle of the endless struggles and machinations of the Italian families there between supporters of the Pope and those of the Emperor of Germany. And Pietro was given a mission to bring peace and suppress heresy, which meant he was welcomed with open arms by Orthodox Catholics, with open opposition by the supporters of the various heresies and factions there in Italy. And he was kidnapped by a gang of Paterine heretics. He was beaten and offered freedom if he would retract all anti-heresy laws in the area. And he agreed to never trouble the Paterines and Cathars again. Well, he declined, and he became a martyr. The backlash against his killers led to his popular uprising and the suppression and exile of those heretics. And he was hit in the head with a hammer by a Patrian kidnapper in May 21st, 1199, and the other kidnappers stabbed his body numerous times with knives and sword, and he was buried in the graveyard of the Church of Santa Maria in Orvieto, and his relics in the Chapel of the Corporal in the Cathedral of Orvieto, and he was later beatified in 1879 by Pope Leo XIII. So that's the fascinating life of Blessed Pietro Parenzo, whose feast day is today, May 21st. And for people interested in these might-be saints, you can connect to my website, theymightbesaints.com, and that's where I highlight Americans on the path to sainthood and talk about the search for canonization miracles. You can tune in every week at 5 p.m. Eastern Time to see a new episode of They Might Be Saints, and we just filmed a brand new episode about Rhoda Wise, the mystic from Canton, Ohio, and her program will be airing later in July. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, the Catholic News Agency's senior Rome correspondent about the incredible miracle of St. Charles de Foucauld. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. We had exciting news this past week where we saw the canonization of 10 new saints, and it was the first canonization that was held in Rome until prior to the pandemic, when we saw people like St. John Henry Newman be canonized. So this was a big deal to have some of these big names be canonized. There are people who are waiting months and months, if not years, for this to happen. So we're so excited to see things back to quote-unquote normal in Rome. And we're excited today to be joined by Hannah Brockhaus. She's the Catholic News Agency's senior Rome correspondent. She was there at this canonization or these canonizations, and she's here to talk to us about some of those people who were canonized, as well as the great miracles that were used to push them towards canonization. Welcome to the program today, Hannah Brockhaus.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Well, it's great to talk with you, and I know you've published various articles on CatholicNewsAgency.com and otherwise about this big burst of canonizations. We haven't seen them for a while. What was it like to be there in person to see the church snapping back to its normal process of canonization?
Well, canonizations are always such a joyful event. I mean, they're honestly one of my favorite events to be at the Vatican. And then this one, just, I think that excitement was even magnified by the fact that it's been so long since we've had this kind of event, we've had this kind of gathering, especially an international gathering. That's one of the things that's really neat about a canonization. And this one, having 10 people, which is quite a large group, they kind of fit a lot of people all together, but it just means that it drew together so many people from such different parts of the world, which was really, really cool.
Absolutely. Do you have any idea how many people were in attendance at this this first canonization in 2 years?
So the Vatican estimates around 45,000 people, and then possibly towards the end of Mass for the Pope's Regina Caeli, there might have been another 5,000 or so that gathered.
Wow, amazing. And I think one of the things that showed me that they were making a lot of saints all at once is even the famous banners that they hang in front of St. Peter's Basilica, they were doubling up, putting multiple faces on those banners. So they were getting everybody in there. But there were some favorite saints of mine, even St. Charles de Foucauld. We've been waiting some time for this canonization to happen, and it finally happened. Tell us a little bit about St. Charles and why he's sort of a big name amongst this group of 10.
Well, he's well known, of course, I think especially because he wrote a lot of letters during his life, and especially near the end of his life. And so we have his writings. Many people have read them, have reflected on them, or, you know, just have met this saint through them. So a little bit of his history. I mean, he was killed, assassinated in 1916 by a band of men where he was living as kind of a hermit in the Sahara Desert in Algeria. But before that, of course, his history goes, you know, way back to his youth, when he had kind of lost the Catholic faith of his baptism and was living as a soldier and explorer, but living kind of a dissolute life, not following, a moral life, but had a conversion as a young man, and sought out to answer the question, what does God, what does Jesus want me to do with my life? So he looked different places. He went to the Holy Land. He became a Trappist monk. And eventually he settled in the Saharan desert as kind of a missionary to this ethnic group called the Tuareg people that live there in the Sahara Desert. He called himself a brother to everyone, kind of a universal brother. And he is known by many people as Brother Charles of Jesus because of that.
Amazing. Yeah, he's the big name of that group of 10, but there are several notable people within that group. And I think that many people around the world are excited to see canonizations up and rolling again. And one of the things that I find so interesting is with these canonizations, they need to find two miracles, one for beatification and a subsequent one for canonization. And these need to be serious conditions, not liable to go on their own. They must be instantaneous, complete, and lasting cures, and there must be no medical treatment that relates to the cure. So it's really tough when the church is applying that centuries-old criteria to find out, to find and prove the miracles that are used to propel somebody along the path to sainthood. And but I think that the miracle related to St. Charles de Foucauld is especially interesting, considering the person who was cured in this case. So talk a little bit about this. And you wrote a wonderful article on CatholicNewsAgency.com about this, where we talk about the one of the carpenters falling from a vault in the chapel of St. Louis High School in Saumur in western France, and it's absolutely amazing. Tell us a little bit about that scenario of how that miracle happened.
Absolutely. First, I just want to say thank you to a French colleague who did the interview for this story in French, Solène Tadier. It's an amazing story. A young carpenter, I think he was just 21 years old. As you said, he was working on the ceiling of a chapel in a high school in western France when he fell more than 50 feet onto kind of the armrest of a church pew. And I guess he was alone at the time. There wasn't anyone in the chapel with him. And he ended up being impaled. By that church pew, by that piece of wood. Remarkably, as he recounts it, he kind of got up and wandered into the school where he found people who helped him and called to the emergency services and an ambulance and all of that. He was rushed to the hospital for surgery. But soon after that moment happened, his manager, his construction manager, Francois Asselin, was called and made aware of the accident. And Francois and his wife began to pray for the young man, who himself is not Catholic or baptized. And they, also messaged to their parish priest, and they got people in the parish praying. And they all decided to pray through the intercession of Charles de Foucauld, or in French, Charles is pronounced Charles. And Charles happens to also be the name of the young man who had the accident.
Absolutely.
So, of course, there was, just an interesting coincidence. And the parish of Francois and his wife, their parish was also called Charles de Foucauld Parish. It had been named after the then blessed Charles de Foucauld at the time.
Amazing. So we're talking today with Hannah Brockhaus from Catholic News Agency. She's the senior Rome correspondent. We're talking about the newly canonized St. Charles de Foucauld and the miracle that was found that led to his canonization, the recovery of a 21-year-old man who had fell 50 feet onto a church pew working on the ceiling, an amazing accident. And one of the things that's interesting with canonization miracles is that everybody must pray to just one saint. If you pray to John Paul II and Mother Teresa and any of your other favorites, the church may say congrats on your miracle, but they won't say this is one we're going to use because we don't know where the intercession came from. So it sounds like everybody was gathered there in a way praying for St. Charles de Foucauld to intercede. And so what happened next? So they called the the medical authorities, they brought him in. What was his what was the expectation when they brought him into the hospital?
Well, they expected, obviously, there to be severe trauma to organs. They expected organs to have burst just from the fall alone, let alone from the impalement of this wood. You would have expected to hit a major organ. For him to even have survived to get to the hospital was already considered an amazing fact. So, obviously, when he was shortly thereafterwards healing, that no major organ had been damaged or hit by the wood, that he made just a remarkably fast recovery. The doctor said they didn't have an explanation for that.
Amazing. And I think what's particularly interesting, too, this whole story is amazing, but the accident occurred on the eve of the 100th anniversary of the death of St. Charles de Foucauld. So they were really praying in a timely way to the right person.
Absolutely. That's another one of those coincidences that actually, as believers, we would say is probably providence, right? We don't believe in coincidences, but just God's providence. So there were just all those moments that came together, in which after the young man Charles was healed, they brought Francois and others to say, okay, this looks like a miraculous healing. We better get the church involved. We better call the Vatican. We better, get the local diocese involved to examine this.
Amazing. And so this was in 2016. So 5 or 6 years passed from that. And usually that's what the church requires, some time to pass to show that it's a lasting cure. And how is Charles, this construction worker today, how is his health?
Well, he appears to be, happy, of course, that he received this miracle, calls himself, refers to himself as kind of someone who's received a miracle. Interestingly enough, he hasn't become Catholic himself or been baptized. So I think that's an interesting feature as well, that this miracle happened to a non-Catholic. We can obviously pray for his conversion. He went back to doing carpentry. That's where he feels that's his job and that he's good at. And he didn't let this accident stop him. So he's continued. And he's, as well, joining and telling the story of what happened to him.
Absolutely amazing. And who knows what the future holds if St. Charles de Foucauld will intercede for his conversion to Catholicism. He sure has a good reason to do so. And as you point out, this is one of the very rare cases where a non-Catholic, non-Christian has a miracle that's used towards a canonization. It's extremely rare. It's almost always Catholics who are seeking out the intercession of a future saint. So wonderful. And going forward, we had these 10 canonizations that happened in Rome, sort of stockpiling them all and doing them all at once. Are things going to be getting back to normal in Rome? Will they be getting back into the normal cycle of things?
I really hope so. It does look like events and things are moving back towards normal. The Pope's weekly audience on Wednesdays with the public has now for a few weeks been back in St. Peter's Square. So now many, many people can attend and be present for that, which I think is a really good sign.
Wonderful. And for people who want to follow your great writing, is Catholic News Agency the best place to find you?
Yeah, that's exactly the place they should go.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Hannah Brockhaus, for joining us on today's program and for your article about St. Charles de Foucauld and the incredible miracle that was worked through his intercession. Thank you so much, Hannah, for joining us today on the program.
Thank you, Michael.
God bless. That was Hannah Brockhaus from Catholic News Agency. She's the senior Rome correspondent. Check out that article on CatholicNewsAgency.com and any of her other writing to find out about the goings-on and happenings in Rome. And it's an exciting time for all of us to know that canonizations are back up and running in Rome. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to EWTN.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. Those people listening to this program in the morning will be able to watch my new episode of Explore with the Miracle Hunter on today, May 1st at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. We're talking about the Holy House of Loreto, and that's where the Virgin Mary is believed to have lived and received the Annunciation. But how did this house get from Nazareth to its current home in Italy? Tune in to Explore with the Miracle Hunter to find out. And next week, we'll be doing an Explore episode on May 28th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll be traveling to New Orleans We'll be looking at Our Lady of Prompt Succor, who has inspired Catholics during the darkest periods in New Orleans history, including a disastrous fire and a British attack during the War of 1812. Check it out. Explore with the Miracle Hunter New Orleans next week at 6 p.m. on May 28th. And if you're looking for a new book, check out Science and the Miraculous, How the Church Investigates the Supernatural, from Tan Books and available at ewtnrc.com. And next week, I'll be traveling to England and Ireland to film 6 new episodes of Explore with the Miracle Hunter. Elizabeth Ficicelli will be stepping in as guest host next week, so I'll be chatting with you in 2 weeks. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.